You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over God's magnificent planet on WWBC on the web.
That's right. 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also archive all the shows there. We are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can hit the on demand button, get any one of our shows that are archived there. And then, of course, we share all of the information on our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and all of our social media channels, which is out on everywhere, TikTok and Facebook and all Instagram. We're all on all of them under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
We're making use of all the freebies.
That's right. All the free publicity for sure.
So for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, if you're a new listener or if you are someone that have been listening to our show, Ellen O'Neill and myself has been on air for 15 years with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. It's a one-hour show. We have the show divided into two segments. If you would like to book a segment, you're more than welcome to call me, Sita Begee, or you can email me. I can be found very easily.
Yes.
On our website. And we also have Ali Tambor, a friend of Ellen, that joined our cast of merry characters here a while back. And she comes and sits with us and co-hosts if Ellen can be here. And it's fun to have Ali on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Our board is run by Danny Whiting, and we sit here on Mondays and we heat up the airwaves with kitchen table topics, things that every family actually should be talking about on a daily basis, whether it's financial literacy, vocational training, trade, voting, running for office, talking about saving the whales, clean air, sunshine, water.
Maybe opening a book.
You want to write a
business.
Book. You want to write a book? Yeah, you want to open a business? Whatever it is, we talk to folks right here in our studio or folks call in and we just have a wonderful show. It's like having coffee without actually messing up Danny's station and bringing the coffee in.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? It's virtual coffee.
That's right. It has a good one.
Well, and we had a great week. We've had a few great weeks with some guests that we've had on, and you were able to attend some galas this week as well, Sita, correct?
I sure did. Okay, there's our guest. So I just wanted to say who our guest was, but she beat me to it. How do you like that? So our show is fun, it's unscripted, it's educational, and we give out valuable information on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you're right, this past weekend, I attended the VIP breakfast for the major motion picture production, which will be filmed right here in Melbourne, Florida. The Untold Story of Melbourne Founders. And after the VIP breakfast, we attended a red carpet gala in the evening, and we saw a little snippet of the screenplay and the music, the introduction and all that stuff. It was really fun.
How exciting.
Yeah,
it was to be happening right here in Melbourne.
I think for Melbourne, and it was amazing because I spoke with Mayor Paul Alfrey, who, bless him, he's 100% behind this film, and he said, you know, I grew up in Melbourne, and I didn't even know that Melbourne, Florida was founded by three freed slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was good.
Really cool.
Today's show, you know, I always have these wonderful authors that I reach out to them, then we strike up a conversation, and next thing you know, we've got them on our show. And Nadia Crane is no different. I actually spoke to her a few months ago, and we had a great conversation. So she's on and she's going to be talking about her books. And the second segment is going to be with Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried. Mm-hmm. And so I know that Nadia Crane is on the phone, and so we're going to welcome her to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Hello, hello, Nadia. Thank you for taking the call, the time to call in.
Thank you so much for having me. What a delight to be here.
What state are you calling in from? I have to make sure because sometimes my guests move around a little bit.
Well, you're absolutely right, because I think the last time we were in contact, I was up in North Carolina. I have family there. But today I am in Tampa, Florida.
You're in Tampa, girl. If I'd known what I would have tried to entice you to come sit in studio with us. But it's a long drive. It really is a long drive.
It is. It is. Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about your background and what got you into writing.
Oh, I have been writing seriously on and off, really, my whole life. In fact, recently I came across some poems I had written when I was like 5 years old. I've been dabbling in writing. I'm kind of a closet writer. I just came out recently, right? I've been writing for a long time, on and off. I guess seriously, right around my separation and divorce, I started writing as a tool for healing. And I spent about 10 years writing a devotion on human relationships, which is still in the editing process. So sometimes it's like what I want to write and what God wants me to write are two different things. So that tells you a little bit about my writing. Plus, I'm slightly ADHD, so sometimes I'll go from topic to topic. So you'll have to just put on your seatbelt for the ride.
Yes. And so you use writing as a spiritual journey to heal and to inspire. And I have to say, I did read your book. And the one that you sent me, The Wine and Faith, 19 Days in Napa. And I highly recommend that book to anyone who wants a page turner. I started the book yesterday around, I want to say, maybe 10 a.m. And I read for like 2 hours, and then I went to the Hindu temple. And I came back, and I started it again at 3, and I finished the book 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I couldn't put it down because it's a book that speaks to every woman in America who's married and has children and going through so many challenges. So talk to me. Is that story your story or is it a true story? It's an awesome story.
I'll start by just saying that there are, you know, it's a fiction, it's a book of fiction, which means that there's tiny bits of possible truth in there. But mostly, it's about a journey that a woman takes. She's in a crisis of faith. Her marriage is blowing up and she just doesn't know what to do. She's really absolutely beside herself. And, you know, you hit it you hit the nail on the head. It really is written for every woman on this planet that is in a relationship, for sure. So I would say that the book, if I had to say what three things it sort of encompasses, I would say it's about emotional resilience. This woman is in therapy and, she's been going to marriage therapy for years on and off. She goes to her own therapist and she's trying to cope with all of this sort of these struggles that she has, and she has multiple struggles like we all do, right?
Yes.
So emotional resilience is probably one. Another I would probably define as self-discovery. She has to get out of her current situation. So her therapist and her husband basically, as sort of almost as a joke, they say, well, why don't you just go away for a few days and get your head on straight, right?
Right.
So she's like, yeah, okay, fine. I'm going to call my familia who lives in Napa, and she's been, you know, wanting me to come stay with her for like eons. So I'm going to call her up. And so that's how she goes on this trip to Napa. But here's the key. The key is she's getting away from her current situation so she can think a little bit more clearly. And so this 19 days in Napa is really a lot about self-discovery as she reflects on her past experiences, her beliefs, her values. And then through the book, she meets people, right? She meets,
yeah, I like how she weaved that, what she did. And, you know, the husband, when he spoke, he was really being mean when he said, you know, when he told her to leave, right? And so then she decided to make this list of all the people she knew who lived in California. And I love the way how she navigated this 19 days to meet up with, of course, Jill. I feel like I know Jill. I feel like she was sitting in my house for a few hours. And I feel like I was drinking wine right along with her. But Jill, she had that strength, and that she was very courageous, actually, to say, I'm going to go. She booked the ticket. She called Amelia. She went out to California. Amelia was doing extremely well after her divorce and the loss of her child. And Amelia is really an angel in disguise. And I like how you talk in the book about God incidents or God-cidents. I call it Godisms. Yep. I call it Jesus-isms or Godisms. But the thing is, she had angels right along with her on the whole 19 days that she didn't know existed, from the missionaries to her cousins. And she learned something from every single person that she met out there that she should have known before, but she didn't have the time because of the marriage and the children and the breakdown.
So emotional resilience, self-discovery, and then I would say the third is empowerment, right?
Yes.
By meeting with her her cousins and being out of that stressful situation, she's in a new situation, beautiful, you know, she's swimming in pools in California, in Thousand Oaks, she's in Sacramento, she's in Fort Bragg, and she is really taking control of her life. And so at the end, she finally has enough confidence.
Yeah, I like to say gumption, right? She had the nerve. Now the book ends where the children goes up to bed and she says to her husband, Derek, that she needs to talk to him. So are you gonna have a part two? Because you kinda left us hanging there, because I'm like, she's gonna tell him she wants the divorce. And she is going to go through with that, and I could see her soaring like an eagle from that point onwards. So it's very inspirational. And I think for every woman out there who's struggling with making that decision, she used her faith, which is Christianity, to help her to navigate. But at one point, her faith also was detrimental to her, because she felt as though she could not get this divorce because she was Christian. So talk to us a little bit about how faith played such a big part in this book.
Yeah, sure. So first, the book is for anyone who's having a crisis of faith and for anyone who might be stuck in a relationship that isn't going anywhere, or worse, is experiencing disrespect. And that's, I think, universal for women. Not that I'm saying that we all have disrespect, but I mean, for those women who are in relationships where they're not being respected, this book might be a trigger. So I'll have to say a trigger warning. But, I would say that I'm losing track of what your question was. Can you tell me again?
Well, I was just saying that, in some ways, the fate helped her to make the decision. But in some ways, because she was Christian, it was kind of detrimental for her. She didn't want to get the divorce because she felt as though people would judge her. She was raised that you stay and raise the kids and be a good wife. And she had a lot of trouble trying to figure out what part fate will play in this impending divorce.
The faith was certainly a stumbling block. I think for Jill, she was raised, her parents were not necessarily upholding the same doctrine as the church. And Jill was trying to balance that out because they were mixed messages. And then when she meets, all the people along her way, even the missionaries, I mean, they basically say, look, there comes a time when you have to say, this relationship isn't working and God does not want you to be in a really, really rough spot. God is calling you for peace. God wants you to have peace, shalom, right? God wants shalom. We all are created for shalom, for this trust, for this peace. And if you don't have trust and peace, so Jill, when she was growing up, this whole divorce is a sin was embedded in her soul. And so I think that Jill just felt she needed to be married and she couldn't even consider divorce. And that's why I think that she, it all became clear when she was away from sort of the day-to-day in and out stress of the marriage.
Right, and the takeaway from the book, the key themes in Wine and Faith, the healing power of faith in the face of marital conflict, personal transformation and spiritual awakening, and forgiveness as a pathway to rebuilding broken relationships. And I see throughout the book, she had this relationship with Derek where Derek was a power and control freak. But as time went by, when she is sitting with Amelia and she's calling the family to check in on the four children, she started in her own way forgiving Derek a little bit because she started questioning his upbringing and his sexuality and why he was so aloof at times. And your book actually speaks volumes to people who have questions in their marriages about so many things. And then you talk about Jill having, she's had some trauma with this family friend that she never really disclosed to anyone. It was the number one secret that she carried around with her all her life. So you woved all that into the book. Talk to us a little bit about the secrets that Jill carried that played a big part in her marriage as well.
Yeah, which is a perfect segue into, I need to read a quote, if it's okay.
Yes.
It's not mine. It's somebody else's. It's a guy I follow. His name is Adam Young. Adam Young, and he has a podcast, and he quotes, "Your life experiences shape the very structure of your brain and therefore profoundly influence how you are presently living your life. Your earliest relationship with your primary caretakers has had the most shaping power on your brain." I hold that part, at least the beginning part, where it says your life experiences shape your brain. And I am not a psychologist. Sure, I took a couple psych classes like decades ago, but there is something called dissociative amnesia. And it's something that occurs that protects your brain, I guess, or protects yourself from
trauma.
Memory.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I grew up in the islands, and I'm not going to lie, we had a lot of trauma. I mean, you're talking, you know, in the islands, being a parent don't come with a handbook, right? And a lot of us, we were spanked as children. We were disciplined. I remember sleeping in one bed with 5 or 6 people on it because we had 18 siblings, with 17 plus myself. So as you could imagine, a lack of resources, a lack of education, less opportunities. And so there's a lot of trauma, a lot of relatives coming in and out. And you're right. It kind of like we put it in the back of our brain and then it'll pop up every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you cope. It's a coping mechanism. And of course, with prayer, you learn to talk to God. You have a friend in whichever faith you have. And you kind of put it there with that person. But Jill had buried it for a long time, what this person did to her. And I like the fact that she decided to call her mother and tell her mother what had happened. Now, I wonder if she had told her mom before, would the mother have, you know, listened to her and say, hey, listen, let's talk to him about this.
It's a really good question. I mean, if that is a good question. I think Jill was so ashamed that she wasn't even cognizant, I don't think, of these memories, as I said, for years and years and years. And then I think there's an incident where her husband punches the wall.
Yes.
And that sort of small act of violence is what basically sort of triggered these memories for Jill. And they started to like roll like a snowball down a hill, right? And pick up speed and put more and more snow. So this little snowball becomes a very big snowball, right?
Yes.
And it's this, it's a weight also. And so the therapist, so I think that, you know, during their marital counseling, the therapist had said to Jill, you know, you might want to talk to your mom about it, because I guess the therapist, you know, again, in psychotherapy, maybe just the point of verbalizing it, telling your story, it helps heal, it helps heal.
And in this case, but you know, Nadia, now I know we have limited time. We have like 3 or 4 minutes left. And I know you mm-hmm. also have reflections, poem and prayers on estrangement. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the 8 stages of grief. Really quickly, tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about that book.
Yeah, absolutely. The estrangement book is for anyone who is dealing with a child that is not talking to them. They've either been cut off or blocked. It seems to be very common. The 8 stages of estrangement are denial, acceptance part 1, rejection, shame and blame, anger, acceptance part 2, and then fear, and then healing begins. And so the book will say you really need to go through these 7 stages, and it's not always sequential. You sort of sometimes revert back to a different stage. You go in between, but you kind of have to go through all of them before you can really get out of, I call it being stuck in the muck. And as long as you're stuck in the muck, you really cannot heal. And so that's what that book is all about. For anyone who is in an estrangement and or parental alienation situation, I just want to whip through a few resources, because
yes.
I think it's just critical. Dr. Joshua Coleman is the guru on estrangement. The Adam Young podcast that I mentioned before will be just helpful for everybody. Another person who does a little bit about estrangement is Matthias Barker. He also has podcasts. And then I had taken Ginger Gentile is a guru in parental alienation, and she puts out, I think it's called the Parental Alienation Roadmap, and I personally found that very instrumental in my own situation.
Well, even though you're not a counselor or a therapist, I have to say that your book is highly recommended to all parents, clergy members, therapists, lawyers, estranged adult children, just about any interested individual who would like to deepen their understanding about estrangement. So I applaud you for that. And so tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Nadia Crane, where can they find your books?
Amazon is for the estrangement book. It's only available on Amazon. The Wine and Faith is available on a wider distribution. Barnes & Noble has it. But it's available on Amazon.
Right, and you have an event that's happening on May 15th. Tell us a little bit about that event that's happening, and if somebody wanted to attend, do they have to get a ticket or do they just show up at that church?
Yeah, they can show up at the church. There is Eventbrite. There is so if you're coming on in person, if you can find the event, and it should be online pretty easily. I'm trying to get it on some calendars.
Well, once you find it, make sure you send it to us here at Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we'll make sure we share that for you.
Yeah, and will you be there, Nadia? Will you be at the event?
I will be.
Okay,
yes.
So I'll see if I could make it. If not, I have friends there. Now, the other thing with you, tell our listeners a little bit. I notice your book has some maybe Indian theme. Lata is an Indian name. Then your cousins, and I was wondering, is she part Indian or the grandparents or the great grandparents? I think you said were from India.
Yeah.
Derek was dark skinned. So I'm trying to visualize all the characters as I'm reading the book, and I'm like, there's some curry involved in here somewhere. And then I saw that the cousins like chicken tikka masala. I'm like, yeah.
Derek is from South Africa, and but his heritage is from South Africa, and Jill is her grandparents are missionaries in India.
Yeah, I could tell. You've woven such the book is a page turner. I mean, you cannot put it down, because as you read it, you read about all the hardships and the emotional trauma, and your book talks so much about the most important thing in a marriage is respect. Now, I used to always think it was trust, but your book taught me that it's not just it's respect. It's love, it's trust, it's all those things that makes living with the person that you're married to your best friend, your cheerleader. And she did not, Jill clearly did not have that with Derek.
Clearly she did not.
Right, and you explored his sexuality a little bit. Now, when he was going away with the guys on the weekends, I kind of thought you were going to drop a bombshell in the end of the book and say, oh my God, he was having an affair with a guy, but you didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, my warped little mind, I'm waiting there. Ooh, let me find out.
You're on TikTok too much.
Yeah.
You're away on TikTok.
I'm like, I want to see what's going on. But I love how you threw in the Bible verses that talked about marriage and talked about the sanctity of marriage and what is expected of a husband and a wife. So with the last minute we have, if you would like to say anything else about the book or your faith, go ahead.
Sure. Well, I just want to mention that that prayer vigil is on May 15th at 7 p.m. at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Tampa. It's a candlelight vigil. It will be about an hour and 15 minutes. All are welcome. And yeah, I will take the last few minutes to just read a little bit out of Wine and Faith.
Okay. Danny's telling us, how much time does she have, Danny? 1 minute? 1 minute. He said you have one
okay.
minute.
Oh, this will take me seconds, maybe. A rich, vibrant wine passed from the bottle to the crystal goblet with the gold rim. The glass glistened in the light. As I sipped the wine, I asked God to bless it, to make it holy. I reflected on what marriage was supposed to be. Holy. Sacred. Loving. Kind. Tender. My marriage lacked sorely. I found myself soaking in a new insight. The red liquid delivered a divine message. Marriage was sacred and not a game of chess requiring strategic moves, nor was it a place to live in fear.
Well, I tell you, you are connecting with a heart, mind, and soul. That is a truly a good verse, a part of the book you're reading there. And Ellen will take it away from there.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today. And we will make sure we get all the information about your books and certainly about the Candlelight Vigil so that everyone could attend. We're going to take a quick minute
to say something. You want to say something, Nadia?
I just want to say thank you so much. It was a delight. I am so pleased to have had this conversation and share a little bit with your audience. So God bless you, and God bless the work that you do.
You're welcome.
We'll be listening to sponsors. We'll be right back after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads, has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and worldwide everywhere where someone can log on to the internet.
That's right, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we archive all of the shows there, and we also post them on all of our social media and our website, which is cedamediainc.com. We got a great guest calling in, Ceda. You're our buddy from a long time ago.
Like I love
forever
Nikki
and
Freed.
Ever. I know.
I like her very much, and she's going to be chatting with us pretty soon. But
yes, we have a sponsor, though, because when they found out that Nikki was going to be on the show, Dr. Mia Hosey, she's a chiropractor here in Melbourne, Florida, also accepting new patients, by the way. She's right here on Edgewood Drive in Melbourne. Phone number is 321-821-7866. And she sponsored today's segment for Nikki Freed to be on the show.
That's right. So Nikki Freed, for our listeners who are tuning in, is the chair of the Florida Democratic Party. She also served as Florida's 12th Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services from 2019 to 2023. She's a lifelong Floridian, an attorney, a passionate activist, born and raised right here in Florida in good old Miami. She graduated from the University of Florida, where she received her bachelor's, master's, and in political science. And, yeah, my daughter went to UF, so that's great. And I won't keep my listeners waiting. We are going to go right to the phone to Nikki Fried. Thank you for taking the time from your busy schedule to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Nikki.
I'm always so honored to be part of your shows, and I know you create such great content for everybody who listens, so I'm excited to be here today.
Thank you. And, you know, I was at the gym talking to a couple of elderly ladies this morning, and they asked me who was coming on the show, and I said that we had an author calling in to talk about her spiritual journey and her book. And then I said I had, you know, Nikki Fried, the Florida Democratic chairperson, is calling in. And they were like, that's cool. And so we chatted a little bit. And a lot of people feel as though the Florida Democratic Party always did so much to help the economy and jobs and gas prices and gun reform. And one of the ladies said, I feel like we kind of sort of got away from that. So talk to us a little bit about going forward for our party and our messaging and your vision for the party in the future.
Yeah, and I think that it's the same message that we have had for the last couple of years. And fortunately for us, you know, I guess the message can cut through. We have been talking about economic issues. You know, I got elected in 2018 as Commissioner of Agriculture, our last statewide elected. And when I ran for governor, the theme tags for my campaign was, lowering the cost of living and raising our standards. And as chair of the Democratic Party, we had three messages that we ran on in the 24 cycle, which was affordability, as property insurance is the number one issue on people's minds here in the state of Florida. And unfortunately, under this current economic spiral, unfortunately, property insurance is going to get much more expensive as people aren't going, the insurance companies aren't going to know how to value replacement costs. And we talked about accountability on the Republicans who have gotten us into this mess, and abortion, you know, access to reproductive health care. And that's going to continue to be our message. We're going to be talking about issues that are kitchen table issues. Right now, we are at a time in our state where we have a significant amount of seniors as the Trump administration is toying around with and already making it much more difficult for people to get access to the Social Security Administration and ultimately potentially missing checks, to protecting our veterans, which is a significant population here in the state of Florida, 1.4 million veterans that call Florida their home. So it's whether it's active military as the third largest state that has bases to those that live here as veterans, and protecting Medicaid and Medicare. So the issues that Florida Democrats fight for, including during this legislative session, is to make sure that we are fighting for our small businesses, fighting for the family units, fighting for our unions, which fuel our economy, and making sure that those issues are what's front and center as we campaign to regain our state.
Right. And also, you know, we are so the Florida Democrats, always talking about voting rights and making sure that folks understand the importance of those who came before us to give us that right to vote. And do you feel like this last election, the Florida special elections that we had, that more people recognized that right to vote and came out, or people were just still sitting on the fence? Because I have a problem when people are registered to vote in the greatest country on earth and they don't exercise that right. It just makes my blood boil. I feel like, why? There are people in India that walks in the mud and the rain. There's people in Trinidad that wake up to take a taxi to get to their voting station for hours. And here you live within, you know, a half a mile, a couple of miles from your voting station. Or you could vote by mail. You know, we've got all these ways to vote. Do you feel like we had more people in the special election that voted?
Actually, that's one of the frustrations that we have always, you know, that people haven't felt that their vote matters, whether it's in our very gerrymandered state of Florida where, you know, you have seats that are Republican plus 30 or Democrat plus 30, and people feel like, why should I go out and vote? What does my vote matter? or what does it matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat that's in the administration, whether in Tallahassee or in Washington, D.C.? And I think for Floridians, more than any other state in the nation, have seen why it is so important to vote. Elections have consequences. Who you vote for matters, whether it is the book banning that's come out of Tallahassee or the attacks that we're seeing in Washington, D.C. on everything that we hold true as Americans. And so in the special elections, we made that case that this is an opportunity to come out and voice your support for, you know, holding up democracy and so much that Floridians and Americans depend on, whether it's access to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, or it's just making sure that there's still, or protecting our parks and our lands. And so we did see for our special election a tremendous amount of people come out and vote. Typically, those numbers are under 20% collectively for turnout, and we did not reach what a presidential year, of course, that's hard, and we always kind of try to figure out why people, you know, don't come out unless it's a presidential. But we saw huge turnouts in both Congressional District 1 and Congressional District 6, independents, Republicans, and Democrats, and seeing a huge shift to the left to support our candidates.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of Americans are worried about inflation, and folks are also worried about the ability of Democrats and Republicans to work together for the public good. Things like student loan and taxes, and like we talked before, you know, LGBTQ rights, prescription drugs, protecting and strengthening our democracy. It's not enough for a politician or a person who is running for office to say, we are going to work together. And then when one side says something to benefit, you know, us humans, our citizens, then the other person shuts it down. What can we do to actually say to everyone in our country that we have more in the United States that unites us than divides us? Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, and I think that's kind of the crossroads that we are at this moment, you know, that there should be some fundamental principles. We should all want to fight for that American dream, and we should be fighting for our farmers and our veterans and access to healthcare. So many things unite us. How we get there to education policies, how we get there for VA, how we get there to balanced budgets is where the debate comes. But the fact that people today are not even willing to go into the rooms together to have the conversations that unite us, because there really are. Nothing I've said so far in this conversation is partisan. Everybody wants clean air and our kids to come home safely from school, have a good quality education, be able to, when they graduate, to decide to go into whether it's vocational schooling or higher ed or go right into the workforce and join a union and be able to have workforce protections. All of these things are things that we should be able to, on a surface level, agree with. But what's happening right now is this really big divide of what is the purpose of government, who's supposed to fund it, who's supposed to fund our polices and our just quality way of life, and making sure that government functions. You know, Democrats feel that, yes, government's supposed to work, it's supposed to be efficient, and it's supposed to be cost savings to the American people, whereas Republicans right now are saying, no, we need to privatize our schools, we need to privatize our jails, we need to privatize fire and policing and everything that typical local, federal, or state government has for, you know, all of my life. And so there is a divide right now about the purpose of government. And I think that those are healthy conversations, but we need to have a resolution that we have a fix together.
Right. And it starts at home. You know, the foundation for everything starts at home, right? Whether it's education or financial literacy or how many babies you're going to have, what kind of work you're going to do. But we have to take it one step further and speak to our neighbors, speak to our friends. I've been telling people, I have friends who are Republicans and Democrats. I have relatives who are Republicans and Democrats. I am not going to not stop talking to my relatives because I disagree on something. I agree to disagree respectfully. And I also say that, you know, there's a quote by Senator Paul Wellstone that I quote all the time. It's the one that says that politics is about the improvement of people's lives. It's about advancing the cause of peace and justice in our country and the world. Politics is about doing well for people. And so when I see a DOGE cut You know, I hear people on my that I work with talking about how that's affecting them. If you have a heart and a soul, the Doge cuts coming out from the state of Florida and how it impacts people, all of us should be concerned about that. Don't you feel that way too?
You're absolutely correct, and that's kind of what is so frustrating, that Trump gave the green light to Elon to come in and to just, you know, cut programs across the board without going in and reviewing the quality of the program, the efficiency of the program, and who gets impacted. We can go through every single one of the cuts. We can even start off with USA Aid. What was the purpose of USA Aid? Because we as Americans fundamentally believe that we should be helping our neighbors. And so when you cut, you know, the USA Aid, and is there, let me also preface this. Is there waste? Yes. There is government inefficiency? Yes. So go clean that up. But now you're hurting people across the world, and you're allowing our enemies, who are going to utilize that vacancy of American presence, to come in and turn people against us. But more importantly, here at home, American agriculture, USAID buys over $3 billion worth of American agriculture. So what happens when that money got cut off? Our farmers, our ranchers suffer because of it. As you're cutting off research for cancer, it is our higher education systems that have been doing that research that have made tremendous strides to curing cancer and preventative mechanisms intact. And so you're seeing at home these cuts into the people that have lost their jobs at our precious parks and our rangers and across the country. There are significant people that are impacted in quality of life for what? At the end of the day, we're going to cut $115 billion from the federal spending. That's nowhere close to $1 trillion. And what it's done is expose that the only way to have cut, you know, to get to the $1 trillion is to go after Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, which all of the Republicans, including Donald Trump, including Rick Scott, including all of our statewide electeds here, campaigned on never touching Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And yet, here we are.
Nikki, the thing is, you know, I don't think it's enough for us to encourage women to carry babies to full term. And then when the babies are born, here we are saying, you know what, we're going to cut Medicaid. We're going to cut subsidy for rent. We're going to cut daycare. You're on your own, baby. You're on your own, dad and mom. It's not, I think when we go to bed at night, if we have food, water, shelter, a place to lay our head, everybody else should have that too. And I've always admired the fact that the Democratic Party always encourages education, opportunities. We encourage comprehensive sex education as well as academic and trade. So where is that breakdown where people still think that the Democratic Party is a tax and spend, waste, fraud, you know, party? How can we, all of us, message this properly and say, hey, we are messaging the right things. It's just how.
Yep. I mean, it's a major issue. I mean, the Democratic Party for a long time got the, you know, the tax and spend at party, but that hasn't been true for generations. I mean, if you look at every Democratic president, you know, going all the way back to even Bill Clinton, and even before that, actually, every Democratic governor in my lifetime has balanced the budget, has reduced spending. When I was commissioner of agriculture,
we need a billboard that says that, Nikki. We do,
yeah,
because I still
better for the economy.
Yeah, because I still hear people saying, "Oh, they give things for free. Give them what for free? You give a kid some food to eat at school. You help people with Medicaid or." Florida Kid Care, that's not tax and spend. That's being a human being a good citizen.
Yeah, I mean, and even on that line, you know, like I was just saying, when I was Commissioner of Agriculture for 4 years, I presented budgets that were lower than my predecessors that were Republicans. And I talk about food insecurity. You're absolutely right, the children. So talking about food, that one of the other things that DOGE has cut is the feeding programs. And so right now in Orlando, not too far from your listeners, you know, that they used to have 26 trucks a week that would go into the food banks. Now they're at zero. And when a child can't learn in school because they can't their stomachs are hungry, that means that child eventually is going to drop out of school or have less grades. That eventually hurts the overall economy. Outside of that, the heart part of it, like that, your heart and soul, the economic impact of food insecurity is an economic issue, both at, you know, productivity in the workforce, but also somebody's ability for success. This all is intertwined. This is not handouts. This is how we look at the economy and fuel the economy, and that is the workforce. And part of that is having a workforce that is fed. And if people can't afford food and we are now cutting all those resources, at the end of the day, it is going to be society that is going to be harmed and going to be having to pick up the health care bill for that individual, or homelessness for that individual, or even the crime.
When you could have stopped all of that by just feeding somebody, right? So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Nicole Heather Freed, who is she's an American lawyer and a politician, and she has served as the chair of the Florida Democratic Party since 2023. And I love speaking with you, Nikki. So tell us a little bit about the upcoming priorities for the Florida Dems for more special elections year-round organizing, and how to get families, you know, aunties, cousins, sisters, brothers, to sit down and have these conversations on a daily basis. We should not just be promoting people to vote, you know, in an election. They should be talking about these things year-round, right?
That's absolutely right. You know, there's three states across the country that do year-round organizing. That's Wisconsin, Michigan, and North Carolina. Florida Democrats are going to be number four. That is the goal, to get us to a year-round organizing model in all 67 counties, from red parts of our state to purple parts of our state to blue parts of our state, because we have to be having we need to rebuild the community. We need to be going and talking to our neighbors. We need to be having street parties again. We need to be going to our community centers. And so that's our number one goal, is to get us into a year-round organizing model and be talking about the issues that are important to the people on the ground. It's not for me to dictate, you know, what it is on people's minds. It's for us to listen and to respond with policies that are going to make their lives better. But we can't have policies if we don't know what the issues are. And so that's why being at the doors, talking to community members, is going to be the top priority. And with that will come voter registration. You know, unfortunately, that the Republicans have changed in the last couple legislative sessions, the process in which to do voter registration, and have ultimately kicked off the active rolls almost 1.5 million Democrats.
So Nikki,
so this is what happened.
So one of my friends sent me a text and said, you know, one of the reasons why she could not have any advertising in her store during the elections is because Republicans are pro-business and Democrats aren't. And so she votes for the Republican Party because it's business-oriented. Where did that come from? Because I know a lot of Democrats who own businesses, who work in businesses, who fight for businesses. I mean, I just feel like our party, like our messaging, has to be bold. We have to say, hey, we care about you from the womb to the tomb. You know, life is politics, whether you like it or not. The kind of diaper you wear when you're born, the formula you drink, the school you attend, the zip code you live in, the type of mortgages your parents get, the kind of rental properties. We care about your teacher. Is she getting a good salary and good benefits? We care about what happens in your life to get to college or trade. What's happening that people are, oh, the Democrats don't care about business? I cannot stand that sentence.
Yeah, it doesn't even make any sense. I owned a small business when I started my own law firm. You know, my fiance is an entrepreneur and owns a small business. That is what fuels the economy. We've got over 32 million small businesses across the entire country. That is what fuels the American dream, to come here to have access. You know, you've got an idea and you want to start a small business, be able to get access to small business loans, so that we economy that works, which right now our banks are holding back capital because of the instability of the markets. But of course we are pro-business. We are pro-business. We are opportunities. Now we have to make sure that people aren't being taken advantage of in the big corporations and coming after the workforce and making it more difficult or more dangerous for the worker. But as far as promoting small businesses, it is, and businesses in general, Democrats have always been pro-business.
Right, and I wish we could take a billboard for that, too, because when my husband ran his medical practice, we had regulations for shop containers, the labs, how we sent our samples out, and I actually liked the regulations. I can't stand when people say regulate. Okay, for every time there's a regulation, something bad happened to get that regulation in place. It just don't fall out of the sky. So I wish our party would do more to say, hey, there's regulations and we could talk about it. But for every time you put a stop sign, there's a regulate. Why we have it? So you don't kill people, right? And the other thing is immigration. Really quick, we don't care about immigration. Of course we do. I don't know any Democrat that says, hey, come to the country illegally and we'll give you free stuff. Do you?
Right. You know, and I think it's also important for people to hear it from me. The Biden border policy was crap. It did not work, whatever it was. And so we do have a lot of people in this country who have seen the broken immigration policy and are frustrated because it impacts the safety of their communities. It impacts the people's ability to find jobs. But I think that it is important that we start there and say, okay, let's get some more border patrols. Let's make sure that people who are here legally can get through the process. People who are escaping tyranny and communism and socialist countries, that they've seen their small businesses being taken away and political opposition being jailed, that we should be able to be that country of beacon of light and hope for those individuals. We got to do it legally, though, and we got to clean up the process. What they're happening now where we are literally kidnapping people on the streets. I'm sure you all have seen today the El Salvador president stood next to Donald Trump and says that we are not returning the person that was the individual who was elite, was improperly out of error sent to the El Salvador jail. That is not okay, you know, and this is where we're at. So there's got to be, again, that common ground of balance of trying to
right,
figure
and
out.
And, you know, we have
policy.
The asylum process and we should let it play. But at the same time, I do believe that there, you know, when someone comes into the country at the border or through the airports or by land, air, sea, you cannot come to the United States without being checked properly. I know.
Correct.
I've brought people here legally. You have to check their, you know, police character record. They have to have certain lab tests done, chest x-rays. You have to be a good citizen so that we can accept you to the United States. And we all agree, come legally.
Correct.
But I think you're right. Somehow our party does not put up that big, big billboard that says, if you want to come to the United States, come legally. That's it. That's all we're saying. And I think we could have partisan, you know, choices.
Yeah, we did. We had a bipartisan bill in Congress last year that was ready to be done. And unfortunately, President Trump, then candidate Trump, stopped it because he wanted to use it as a campaign slogan. We had it.
Yes.
We had more resources going to the border. We had more checks and balances. And unfortunately, it was killed for campaign and political purposes.
Well, you know, my mom had a way of saying things. She would say that every human being has to answer to God when their time comes, mm-hmm. right? And I just hope and pray that as human beings, you know, sometimes human beings are their own worst enemies at times. And I just hope and pray that we as a country could unite and the fear and the division and the hatred, not just in the United States, but around the world, that all of us could change our behaviors. Because when you change your behaviors towards each other, then you could allow love and peace and security to flourish, you know. And as chair of the Florida Democratic Party, I see that in you. And I know you're not crazy left. You're not crazy, right? You're just right there in the middle where you think and you allow most of us to actually have that understanding and we're able to listen to each other. So I'd like to give you the last minute, whatever you want to tell our listeners here quickly on Viewpoint with Sina and Friends.
Yep. First of all, thank you for having me on. Thank you for this conversation. And for those of you who are sitting out there frustrated, come check out your local party from the Florida Democrats. Register to vote. Go get your vote by mail ballots re-signed up, which we have to do every 2 years. Run for office. School boards, you know, city, county commissioners, House, Senate, Congress, this is your time. Everybody has the opportunity to run for office. Please make sure that your voices are heard right now. Stand up for what you believe in. We are going to have balance back into the state of Florida, but we can't do it without each and every one of you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
And we are going to make sure we share all of this on our Facebook pages. We hope everyone listens. This should be the, one of the best download weeks of all time because of this conversation. So thanks again for calling in. And again, to all our listeners out there, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we are on each and every Monday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC. And we share all of this great information each and every week on our website, sitamediainc.com. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we will catch you next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Viewpoint.